It's Maria Menounos here. Are you like me, so obsessed with your favorite TV series that you want more? Have I got the solution for you? AfterBuzz TV. AfterBuzz TV produces after shows for your favorite TV shows, where AfterBuzz hosts break down episodes, answer questions from fans, and interview series cast and crew. Whether it's Game of Thrones, Dancing with the Stars, Scandal, or Love and Hip Hop, chances are AfterBuzz produces an after show for you. So check out AfterBuzzTV.com or download episodes on iTunes. Buzz you later.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Screen Junkies Movie Fights, powered by the Popcorn Talk Network. Now your host, Andy Signore.
Greetings, Screen Junkies! It's 2015 and we're back! I know a lot of you have been extremely upset that we were gone for a week. Our apologies, we needed a break. It's a lot of these fights require us to get some sleep once in a while. But we're back, we're ready to go, and we've actually brought in three recurring champions to start the year off right. We'll get to them in a minute. What's on store for today? We have some amazing ones. The Ant-Man trailer is the biggest news of the week. Everyone's been asking us to get our thoughts in. We're going to do that today. Best Liam Neeson movie. The greatest year in the history of cinema. We have some awesome topics, so stay tuned. As always, bottom right of the corner of the video, if you're watching on YouTube, you can skip through the battles, pick your fight. And as always, I want to be As always, remember the last round is a cue for this week's Honest Trailer, which we have a fun one. So before we start, as always, I want to thank our great friends at Popcorn Talk Network for bringing us here. Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, the entire Schmoes No crew. We're so grateful to be here. They've done some adjustments to the set. We love it. We're here. Go check out Popcorn Talk Network on YouTube to see some other awesome shows. And as always, if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget we're on iTunes. You can go subscribe, comment, all those fun things. Now that I got all that away, let's get and meet our gladiators. These are impressive stats that we've actually compiled, thanks to some people in the comments and just to Jason and Dan for doing it. But first up, you know him, you love him. He's the writer of Honest Trailers. He has a 2 out of 4 wins, 2 wins out of 4 total.
He's 2-2.
And you have a streak of the last 2 you've won, so congrats. Let's see if you can continue the streak. Spencer Gilbert.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a .500 batting average, which gets you into the Hall of Fame. And that's a baseball joke for all our over 70 fans and listeners.
Next to him, really, the I have it wrong. Can you guys switch seats? No, that's not right.
Really?
Is it that hard? You can just say.
I have a whole system here. No, next to him, the undefeated champion so far of movie fights. He's 3-0. It's Dan Merle.
Hello, and I'm fully expecting retribution for the last show. So,
where you didn't let me win.
Yes, I'm coming in expecting to leave here 3-1. We'll see, though.
Maybe I will reward you for being a fair judge.
Maybe. I don't know.
Everyone thinks I'm biased, and we only do this crew, but it's a hard job, isn't it?
It is.
Everyone gives me flack, but come on.
It's actually less pressure being over here. So
good. Next to him, we love him. He's back. He was just on Screen Junkie Show recently.
This week.
Yeah, Mike Carlson. And you are, what's your set? You're 2-3.
2-3, yes. So that's a percentage. I wouldn't be able to figure it out.
See, 2-3, I think he's 2 out of 3. Right?
He's 2-1.
Right. 2-1.
He's 2 out of 3.
Sorry, I did that one. You're 2-1. I don't know. You're 2-1.
2 out of 3, I guess, is what would be the
and
right
say. And you're 2-2.
Yeah.
So regardless, you've each won 2. Dan's won 3.
Right.
Wow. So this is an important battle to see who's going to be the leading spot. And let's not forget, the other man who's 1-1, who's sitting in for the Dan Cam, it's Jason Inman.
Yes, I was the one who dethroned the Carlson.
Ooh. But to be fair, that was a very controversial movie fights because it was only like 35 minutes long and it was very rushed.
Make your excuses, whatever.
And maybe I didn't have a chance to really pontificate and make my points like
does
I normally
anyone
do.
Anyone care about any of this?
No, let's get to the fight.
No, they do.
I want to say there's one more exciting thing if you stick to the end. We've added, because of last year, we had a bonus round that really sort of made things so much more exciting that we are doing that every week now. So the new rule, just for people, the favorites who've watched the show, we're going to go through all 8 rounds. At the end of the 8th round, the loser, the one who has the least amount of points, is out. The final 2 will go into a speed round with questions they have not heard yet, and that will determine if they can get an extra 5 points to actually take the game. So it's going to be very exciting, so stay tuned. And in the meanwhile, let's get to the fights in the great words of King Leonidas himself.
Ooh, it's different.
This is where we fight!
Better?
And this is where they die.
Yeah. It's more high energy.
A little higher energy. We're going to try some new ones, see what sticks. All right, round 1. Marvel has finally released the first trailer for Paul Rudd's Ant-Man, Peyton Reed's Ant-Man, previously Edgar Wright's Ant-Man, which brings us to our first question. Joe Bowstring on Twitter asked, Are we excited by the Ant-Man trailer? It's been a little divisive, I feel like. Some people are, like, digging it, loving it, not. And I feel like this is the perfect round to start us in the new year.
Yeah.
And let's start with Spencer. What were your feelings on the Ant-Man trailer?
My feelings are the same as Paul Rudd's at the end of the trailer, which is, huh. So, I guess no. No is my answer. I'm not excited for this based on the teaser. Actually, since when have teasers been 2 minutes long, by the way? That was the longest teaser I think we've ever had. The problem with this is, I know we've harped on it before, is that all the Phase 2 Marvel movies feel so different from each other. That Winter Soldier's like a spy thriller, Guardians of the Galaxy's like this action comedy. This one is just a step back. It feels so generic. It's the story of, you know, he's a bad guy trying to make amends to save his sick daughter and do something good. That was the Sandman from Spider-Man 3. That was exactly what he was doing to, you know, he was a criminal, but for good reasons. And then the comedy, it's recycled from Guardians of the Galaxy. They did that Star-Lord, who? And they call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, what a bunch of a-holes. You can't do that joke three times in two trailers. And I just worry that this is going to be the first case of a recent Marvel movie kind of rehashing itself. And, you know, these movies aren't formulas. We like them because each one is a little different.
Dan Merle.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I watched and I'm like, all right, you know, that was a trailer. I think that Marvel TV went to Marvel Studios and said, okay, listen, we got a new show premiering in January and we need a trailer. And they're like, what do you got? And it's like, well, I got people walking down hallways and I got a bunch of establishing shots and we have this speech from Michael Douglas.
We haven't done the effects yet, right?
Yeah, they're like, all right, put it in the trailer, throw it in. You know, for me, it was like, it was kind of slapped together. Honestly, I don't think they know what this movie is yet because, you know, we forget, even though it's coming out in July, they lost their director less than a year ago. I think it wrapped, Jason, you can fact check me on this, I think it wrapped last month. So I think that they are still figuring out what this trailer is. So for me, this was like, okay, it's a generic first teaser trailer. I'm not going to read too much into it. Now, if the second one comes out and it's kind of along the same ones, lines as this one, I'm going to start getting a little more concerned. But for me, it's like, all right, whatever. They gave us what they wanted, I guess.
Mike Carlson.
Yes, I am excited for this. First of all, we're a bunch of spoiled kids, all right? We need to remember that. We're getting a movie about Scott Lang, the second most popular Ant-Man, all right? That's crazy. If you told me that when I was 12, I would have hit you in the face, okay? What is there not to like about this? It's Paul Rudd. It's Michael Douglas. We like both of those guys. There's action. There's shrinking down. There's riding on insects. What about this don't we like? Yeah, okay,
the
I agree.
The shrinking down and the riding on insects. It looked kind of eh.
Look, obviously the effects will get better. I don't care if it looks, look, it will look better. But what I'm saying is there's nothing in that trailer that makes me upset or worried. All it does is make me excited. Yeah, is it a grand slam? No. But is it a solid double or a triple?
You
that's
put
a
enough
baseball
of those together,
reference.
You got a run,
that's
which is
I'm
a
saying.
Baseball point.
So I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
So,
sue me.
I would ask you a follow-up now that you've all
sure.
said your points.
Sure.
You said it was funny, but like, are you actually excited to see the second most popular Ant-Man, or are you disappointed it's not Hank Pym?
Well, Hank Pym is in it, too. So I absolutely am. I'm excited just to see this world, the world I loved as a child, come to life. So just the idea that Scott Lang is in a movie is exciting to me. And then all the things that I saw in the trailer, look, again, it doesn't look like it's going to be maybe as amazing as Captain America 2 or Guardians, but those are really good.
And we've expected really good. They've raised the bar so much, we're entitled to expect great movies out of Marvel from here on out.
All I'm saying is I'm excited to see it. I am not saying it's going to be amazing.
Well, so let's step back, though. I think we're all going to see it. I mean, is that
sure.
unfair to
yeah.
say none of us are going to not see the movie?
It's our job.
Was the trailer that they released a good teaser? Is what is the battle here?
Well, you know what was weird is it reminded me a lot of the Man of Steel teaser, the first one we saw, which is like narration over the first part of it and then a brief montage of powers, which I thought was weird because it's, you know, why it's like Marvel took a page
well,
out
they
of
they showed more in the Ant-Man trailer than Man of Steel. Man of Steel showed like two quick shots.
He was just on a fishing
yeah,
boat
but the structure,
for like a minute.
But the structure was the same, which I thought was kind of weird. And it was just, I thought it was strange to kind of paint it as this kind of really serious movie, especially because on its surface, even I think more so than Guardians, this is the most ridiculous Marvel movie that we've seen yet. So that to me says that I think that they're still figuring out what
I preferred the Man of Steel trailer teaser though, because at least it had its own look. It looked like a weird Levi's commercial. This one just looks like Marvel movie number 375.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, let's be honest.
I'm not excited for that. You know, Edgar Wright, I think, A, he either would have brought something really interesting and unique to it, which is very unfortunate, or B, he's been developing this movie for like 5-6 years,
almost
or
10.
Something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It feels like a 10-year-old Marvel movie. It feels like a Phase One would have come out early, long ago, and you know the genre's evolved. And I don't think this
do
movie
we think
kept up
if Edgar was still involved, that teaser would have been better.
I would hope so, but I also would believe that you know this would look like a movie that's been in development for 10 years. So no, maybe not.
Yeah, I just don't know how an Edgar Wright, to be honest, as much as I would have loved to have seen Edgar Wright's Ant-Man, and I really would have, I don't know how that movie would have fit into any kind of cohesive universe. It didn't shock me when he left, because he's such an individual filmmaker. I think it probably would have looked a little more unique, but I also don't think it would be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I like the people involved, though. I understand. I love Edgar Wright. It would have probably been a stronger teaser. He has a specific vision. He had a specific vision for it. It would have been a very, like, pointed thing. We would have said, oh, that's obviously Edgar Wright's voice in this trailer. It probably would have been a little bit better. That being said, I love Paul Rudd. I love Adam McKay. Peyton Reed made Bring It On, which is a good movie. I love the Marvel Universe. All the things involved, and coupled with the fact that, like, nothing in the trailer didn't... Nothing looked like it sucked. Nothing in the trailer looks bad. It looks fun.
No, it looks like a Guardians of the Galaxy ripoff, but with ants.
Yeah, but I'd argue, did it look fun? Like, I feel like, did you guys see the trailer re-edit that's been going around?
Yeah, that was so much better.
That has tainted a little bit of what I'm saying, because, like, when you look at those shots juxtaposed with something that's more fun music-wise, it does look more fun.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they put this serious music, I agree, makes it look like it might be dour. I'm not thinking it's that, though, because it's Paul Rudd and Adam McKay. There's no way there's not a ton of jokes in this movie.
I think you're defending the movie fairly, and I agree with you. I want to see the movie. But, again, the question is, was the teaser trailer good?
Well,
and
question was, are you excited after seeing the Ant-Man trailer?
Yeah.
Fair. That is
what I was arguing.
I'm just worried they're taking the wrong lessons from Guardians of the Galaxy, which to me would be, let's make good original movies, not let's take a funny guy and give him abs and then make jokes about how dumb the name is.
I just feel like it's way too soon to make any kind of judgment call in this movie.
I know I
shouldn't. Of course.
No, but I mean, even just based on the trailer, it's like, I don't think they know what this movie is.
Well, I agree with that, and that's sort of part of what I'm saying. We're like, there's nothing in here that makes me that worried.
So I'm going to call it, you're fair. I'm rereading the question that I did a bad job because that is the question. But I want to change the question slightly. So I'm crediting you for making a point. I think we're all excited to see the movie. I think that's not the right question, though. Did this trailer do its best job to get us excited for the movie? Is what I want this fight to be. So, and I feel like. If changing you can change it slightly because that's fair. If you prep something else, but that's what I feel like we have to discuss, because that's what we have and that's what we're going off of right now.
Right.
So do you, and I go back to you, Mike. I mean, did this trailer get you? Does this trailer really get you excited, or does the idea of it and little pieces that you're seeing get you excited for the movie?
The little pieces I'm seeing do get me excited for it. I agree that there could be a stronger voice in the trailer. There could be a real showing of what the tone of the movie, like Guardians, the first trailer and the second trailer, show you exactly what the voice of the movie is. This is just sort of showing that, it's about, like, redemption. That's pretty much the whole theme of it. And obviously the whole movie can't be just about redemption. So I agree that the trailer could be better. It could show me the exact voice of the movie, and it doesn't. But that being said, this is pieces. This is almost like a promo reel. They might show a toy company this. And if I was working at a toy company, I'd be like, oh, cool. He shrinks down. He rides on something that flies. It's awesome.
So here's where I'm struggling, because I feel like I feel like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids looked a little bit more exciting than some of the stuff they did.
Oh,
like,
man.
And granted, it's early and we can't go too much, but it feels like, I remember the test footage they showed at Comic-Con where he did the shrinking in and out. Like, a piece of that would have got me excited, where I feel like, what are you holding on to? Like, this is the first thing. There's so much baggage to this movie, and you give me a minute-long Michael Douglas monologue, and then you show me one cool shot of him shrinking, but we don't really, I like that moment, but then it's like, it felt like this weird, like, where was he on the end? And it was so out of focus. It felt unfinished.
A teaser's your chance to put your best foot forward, and if that's all they got, we're in trouble.
Yeah, well, yeah, if the question is,
did the trailer get us excited? I want to say
the trailer didn't move the needle at all for me, as far as, I didn't come out of it looking any better or worse about that movie, looking any more forward to it or any less forward to it. So if the trailer's job was to get me more excited about it, then I guess it didn't do its job, because, you know, it didn't do anything to tank it. It didn't do anything to make me go, oh, great, it's going to be awesome. So, you know, I'm exactly where I was before, which is kind of like, oh, we'll see.
Yeah, so ultimately, I got to give. I'm going with Spencer on the win for this, just because you said a couple points. That I think just it doesn't. It again, going back to the question to be specific, are we excited about Ant-Man? Isn't what we're talking about? Because I think we all are excited about Ant-Man.
I'll see it.
Did this trailer really excite us about Ant-Man? And I feel like it didn't do its best service. It was an incredibly long teaser that I don't feel like really like motivated us with some impressive new thing, which you mentioned. And I do think it fit sort of that moment of it. It was ripping off Guardians, but then it didn't even give me the tone of Guardians, and so. I'm giving
recycle jokes, recycle premise. We got
first
a Dan.
For
we got a, yeah, we got
ding,
Dan
ding,
Cam.
Ding.
Dan Cam.
Just to give some facts to something Dan said, the production wrapped on December 5th.
Right. Wow.
And they started development of this movie in 2006.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the production wrapped a month ago.
Yes.
There's no way they know this movie, especially if it's Paul Rudd and Adam McKay writing it. They have no idea what this movie is.
It's true. Now. But hopefully they will figure it out because we want it to succeed.
Hope so. We'll find out in July.
All right, moving on to round two. Taken 3 as opens this weekend, and Taken was our Australia last week, which thanks everybody for watching that one. that brings us to our question for round two. William Carlson on not related.
Is this a plant, Mike? Is this a plant?
No.
On Twitter asked.
Yes, it's a plant.
Best Liam Neeson movie. What do we think? There's so many he's done. He's had, you know, as we even pointed out in our trailer, he's sort of known for that dramatic work. And now in his later age, how old is Liam Neeson? 50?
62.
60s, yeah.
62. I looked it up yesterday.
I mean, and now he's like the action star.
He's literally retirement age.
Which who would have thought Oscar Schindler would become the action hero for a generation? 62, is that correct?
Yes, he is 62.
So what is our, I mean, so much just to pick from. What is the best Liam Neeson movie? We'll start with you, Dan.
I mean, I think there's only one answer. It's Schindler's List. I mean, Liam Neeson has
Why
made...
Are you laughing?
It's a chuckle. Right?
It's the first time it's that the name Schindler's List has gotten a laugh out of somebody, except for Seinfeld.
Every time.
You know, I mean, listen, Liam Neeson's been in a lot of good movies, but Schindler's List is a cultural milestone. It's a landmark movie. It told a story that really not many people knew about. And it was a story that needed to be told. It's a Best Picture winner. It's, you know, on every list of AFI best movies of all time, Sight and Sound, all that stuff. And he's amazing in it. He was nominated for an Oscar for that role.
Didn't win, correct?
He did not win. I forget, it was 93. I forget who won that year, but he didn't win. I
sure
think he should have.
Jason's on it.
Jason's on that, I'm sure. And, you know, a lot of people would say that, you know, well, the movie's more of a wider scope. It's not necessarily a quote-unquote Liam Neeson movie. But the movie's heart is in that scene at the end where he's talking to Ben Kingsley. And he said, "This car, I could have sold this car. There's three more people, this pen." It's about one man's sacrifice. It's about, you know, his drive. It's about what he did and the toll that it took on him. And I don't think there's any question that it's Liam Neeson's best movie.
Mike?
Well, I'm not going to say that's not a good movie. But my personal opinion, what's the best Liam Neeson movie, is The Gray. All right? Hear me out here. Liam Neeson, in the later part of his career, he's turned into an action star. This is not Liam Neeson versus people. This is Liam Neeson versus the elements and wolves. All
sort
right?
Of, kind of.
Yeah.
Well.
Almost.
What do you mean?
Go on.
All right. Yeah. Anyway. Here. Let me finish making my point, then we'll
end. You're going to hate all my hope. Yes.
Yeah. All right. This is a movie about the human condition. This is about going on in the face of adversity. When life throws something at you, you say, "No, I am not going to quit. I am going to continue on." Liam Neeson decides not to kill himself at the start of the movie. He continues on. He decides that he's going to not stop and let these wolves kill him and all the people around him that he doesn't even know very well. He decides to go on in the face of incredible adversity, and he keeps doing it. In the last part of the movie, he has a chance to just go, "Hey, wolf, come at me, bro." And he decides, "No, I'm going to fight." He breaks the bottles. We love that. And then the thing goes to black.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what happens in life, guys. That's what life is like. We don't know.
That's not what good movies are like,
that's
though.
That's not what the trailer promised us we'd see.
Oh, there are plenty of movies like No Country for Old Men where we don't see things that we think are probably pivotal moments in the movie. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy.
Spencer.
Yeah. Okay, the answer is Taken. The question wasn't, what's Liam Neeson's best movie? It's the best Liam Neeson movie. And that's a subtle difference, but I think a Liam Neeson movie, as we know it, is its own genre of Liam Neeson killing everyone.
It's Adam Sandler all over again.
Well, it depends on its phrase. Now, action movies were dead until Taken came along. We were in the early 2000s to mid-2000s. It was all, God bless him, I love comic book movies, but it was all comic book movies. That had replaced action. Liam Neeson throat chops his way back into relevance, creates his own genre, and that saved action movies for me. It's a perfect film. It has an ending, start to finish.
You're just talking Taken, yeah, not...
Taken 1.
Yes.
Taken 1. We don't... This is just about Taken, not the Takenings that follow. I mean, we're not even talking about The Gray, because that would not exist had Liam Neeson not done Taken. Nonstop would not exist if he had only done Schindler's List. Oh, it's the guy from Schindler's List on an airplane. Like, yeah, let's go line up for that one.
I see Dan just... Yeah, go ahead, Dan. Bring it out.
Taking I know who you are. I'm taking that out. Name three great moments from Taken.
Okay.
You know he just watched it to write the honest trailer, right?
I know. I did too.
The sex slave auction. Awesome. Talking her through what to do on the phone and then talking to the bad guy afterwards. Well, awesome. And then when he walks in, pretends to be the French guy and extorts all the bearded criminals and he realizes that's the guy he was talking to on the phone. You don't remember me, do you? We spoke 2 days earlier. Oh, shit! Oh shoot! And they're all throats just boom, boom, throats destroyed.
How any of this stacks up against Schindler's List in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I'll chime in. He's making an interesting point in that best Liam Neeson movie is that we had an argument last week last episode with Adam Sandler movie and is Punch Drunk Love really an Adam Sandler movie or is that a Paul Thomas Anderson movie
that Adam
and
Sandler
I got
was
flack
in.
From Dan mostly but a lot of other people and the argument I did fight for, and I'm not saying he's going to win because of this but I want to make sure it's all out there so we understand why someone wins
right
he's making an interesting point of maybe Schindler's List isn't a Liam Neeson movie.
But there's a genre
Liam Neeson
now.
Performance.
So you're saying that everything Liam Neeson did before 2005 doesn't count?
No, I'm just there were saying this is...
No, you said a Liam Neeson movie has reinvented action genre, and that's what a quote-unquote Liam Neeson movie is, which would mean that Rob Roy doesn't count. Let's throw out Schindler's List. Let's throw out everything he did before Taken.
I'm not saying throw it out. I'm
Dark
saying
Man.
Dark Man.
God bless Dark Man. But this just gives it more weight that this movie spawned a second act of his career and its own genre of Liam Neeson versus blank.
And they're all awful. Taken 2 is bad. Nonstop was one of the worst movies that I saw last year. Taken's not even really that good.
Taken is fine. That good.
It's okay. It's good for a January action movie, which is what it was.
It doesn't... Here, look, I'm going to go back to this. I'm going to defend the end of The Gray and say that it says... I am dead serious. The end of The Gray, it says more about life than Taken or any of the other movies. Taken's fine action movie. The Gray, when you cut out before the end fight, in life, it only matters that you try. The outcome does not matter.
Here's your
the
problem.
And like
does,
life, here's your it's problem. A huge I'm disappointment.
Honest. I'm going to be honest. I'm cutting you out only because...
Do I have to leave?
You can't. This is the reason that ending is so sour, I feel like to me and to many, is they hyped it so much.
The trailer was him saying, bring it on, Wolf.
Breaking glass bottles, going to the Wolf, and then you go to a movie and find out that's the end, which you already know it's coming.
That's the marketing department's problem, not the filmmaker's problem.
But it taints the movie. It's such bad marketing that it does taint the movie, and I think it's unfair to compare The Gray with Taken. But go ahead. Do you have something to chime in?
I have some facts that may sway this argument. Spencer made the comment that action movies were dead in the early 2000s. Are you forgetting about the Bourne movies, Bad Boys 2, The Fast and the Furious, Battle Royale,
Fast and the Furious doesn't count.
Charlie's Angels, Kung Fu Hustle?
Yeah, I am discounting
all
those.
All seven?
That's seven movies over the space of 8 years.
No, these are movies from 2000 to 2005. Taken came out.
How many Liam Neeson action movies have there been?
When did Taken come out?
2002, I believe.
No, it didn't. It's not that early.
Oh, 2008?
Yeah. It's over those 7 years.
Action movies were not dead in the 2000s.
You named seven good action movies over 8 years. Just
well,
saying,
how many good Liam
dead.
Neeson action movies have there been over the last, seven years?
One, Taken.
50.
Exactly.
I created a genre that kind of sucks, didn't you?
I don't care. That is not Taken.
It sucks
hold
except
on.
For The Gray.
That's not Taken. You can't put Taken on trial for Taken 2 and Nonstop and the other ones. This movie was so good.
Unknown? Did you guys watch that one?
No.
Awful.
But you can't hold Taken accountable for being so awesome that he recycled it over and over again. We're just taken from the start of Taken 1, when she gets taken, to the the end when he kills that sheik for taking her.
But your entire argument rests on a premise of that you made up, which is that only these Liam Neeson movies exist. Like it's you're building
so
your
tell
argument.
Tell me why Schindler's List is the best Liam Neeson movie.
Because, well, he plays Schindler, and it's called Schindler's List, so I think it's a Liam Neeson movie. It's about his character.
It's about the Holocaust.
It's about Schindler. It's about one man's actions during the Holocaust.
Which Who won that year? Did we find that out?
It is Tom Hanks beat Liam Neeson in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's yeah. tough. No, that's tough.
But Schindler's List did win Best Picture.
Let me ask this. Has anyone watched Schindler's List more than once?
Yeah, I've seen it twice or three times.
You're the guy.
Liar. Can we get a lie detector in here?
I'd pass it with flying colors.
It's one of those movies like Requiem for a Dream where like once was enough.
It's a great movie, but yeah, I don't...
It depends what scale you are judging on. Like, great movie with impact or great movie with watchability and...
It's
know.
Not
my,
a great here's movie. Here's my problem. Because we have to make a call here. I have to make a call. I like his argument. It created a genre. If we're going Liam Neeson movie, it did create a genre. Whether we like it or not, it defined a genre, a generation, a franchise. Every movie he does comes around that time. I'm not saying it's a better performance. Liam, I think he does, but where I'm struggling is... If we're going to go best Liam Neeson performance, which is the question is, I'd give it to you in a heartbeat. But where I'm struggling is, like, it is a Holocaust movie. It's a Steven Spielberg movie.
We need to define what these questions are before we ask them. Liam Neeson movie.
You got to make
if
a
If we're going to go into a weird subgenre of movies and all of a sudden, that's not Adam Sandler, that's P.T. Anderson. Well, that's not a Liam Neeson movie, that's the Holocaust. Like, we could play semantics. This is such an easy question.
But it's one of the best movies of all time.
But so you're basically just saying because it's the best movie and the best performance, it just is the best Liam Neeson movie.
What? Because it's four words. Best Liam Neeson movie. Liam Neeson's in it. It's about Liam Neeson's character. He's the heart of the movie, and it's one of the best movies ever made.
Spencer, what's your argument?
I just think when you say Liam Neeson movie, you think movie of a certain genre.
No, you don't. You're saying that because that's the only way you're going to win.
That's what I'm here to do. I'm not here to make friends.
You guys, what is life about if not for trying in the face of adversity? All right. The wolves represent all of the things in life that are horrible.
I wanted to poke the bear a little bit to score win. Did win!
Oh. Yeah!
Because honestly, it is the better... If you're going to define two movies, of course Schindler's List is better than Taken.
You know what? You know what shocked me?
Of course it's a better movie.
Hey guys, let's come over and watch Schindler's List.
I would get it if these two guys were like playing devil's advocate and like because I picked it first that they're like, all right, we'll argue for these. No one else picked it.
Round three. You won, Dan. I wanted to have a little bit of a fight. I pushed it.
This was the one I was like, if I lose it's that one.
All right, round three.
He would have walked off otherwise.
20th Century Fox officially announced that Channing Tatum's Gambit movie, a solo Gambit movie, is dropping October 7th. Which brings us to the question for round three. Evan Tate on Twitter asked our thoughts on it. Do we want a Gambit solo film with Channing Tatum? That's the question at hand. And we're going to start with Mike this round.
100% yes. Right now, it is like anything goes. It's like the Purge. It's like 24. We're going to get as many comic book movies in the next 5 years as we possibly can before the public just got so sick and angry. We need to get everything now, okay? No. That's my philosophy.
It can't be sustained.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So we need to get, like, every week, like, it'll get to the point where there's a new one every week. So let's get it. Like, it's Gambit. We're going to get a Gambit and a Deadpool movie in the same year. Again, my 12-year-old brain would explode.
Pretty cool.
Gambit was my favorite character ever. And I understand it's not Marvel Studios, but the fact is, if it was Marvel Studios, they wouldn't have room on the schedule for a Gambit solo movie. So we're sort of lucky in that regard. Channing Tatum, super charismatic. I haven't heard the accent. I hope he's working on it.
Yeah.
I hope, Channing, please work on it. But that being said, yeah, why not? Of course we want this. We're going to get like a movie where Belladonna, one of Gambit's ex-girlfriends, is in it. Of course I want to see that.
Spencer.
I mean, okay, I do want a Gambit solo movie, but I want it to star the original Gambit, Taylor Kitsch from Wolverine Origins. He was the one standout thing in that entire movie, aside from Will.i.am's cowboy hat, that you walked away from being like, oh, that was pretty good. Gambit is, he's like from the South, we know that about him. He's a rogue, and he's suave.
He dates rogue.
Yeah.
He's both, yeah, well.
Channing Tatum is as suave as, like, a potato. He's not a suave.
Oh, wow.
Ladies out there, I think, would disagree. But.
He's hot. He's, like, jock, like, oh, hunky guy. He's not, like, the cool James Bondy guy of superheroes. That's what Taylor Kitsch is. I know it's tough to bounce back from Battleship. It's tough to bounce back from John Carter. But the reason we all fell in love with Taylor Kitsch was Friday Night Lights, where he was Tim Riggins, who was, like, this southern, mysterious, suave dude. That's Gambit. And he's already played him. Let's do it.
Dan.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say Gambit's southern. He's Cajun. That's two. Those are two separate things.
Says you know, the guy Channing, from Louisiana.
I'm from Arkansas.
Oh, whatever.
I know the difference. It's in my wheelhouse.
Fact check, is that where Dan's from? Yeah.
Jason, can you check my home address for me? Check my birth certificate. You know, Channing Tatum, he's having to fight a little bit of an uphill battle, I think, right now, because he did start off as that kind of jock hot guy. He had a really good year. He was hilarious in 22 Jump Street, and he was, I think, the best actor in Foxcatcher. So I don't have a Channing Tatum question. I think he can definitely pull it off. I am just worried. You know, Gambit was fun. He was fun in the cartoon. He's a little one-dimensional, like the animated series when they went to the bayou and the tithe and all that stuff. That's one of my least favorite episodes of that cartoon. So that the plot, you know, if they go that direction, I'm not that engaged with it. I'm just worried that they're going to try to tie it into this overarching mythology that they're building with X-Men, which I don't want. If it's a Gambit standalone film, that's what it should be. It should be a Gambit standalone film. I don't need to see Wolverine. I don't need to see, you know, Mystique roll up in the end and be like, we need your help, and then setting him up to be an apocalypse.
Do we need to see Belladonna?
Yes, we do need to see Belladonna.
Sure,
I'll answer
you
for
know,
Dan.
If you want to, you know, you can make an engaging story out of, you know, some comics material that's maybe not the most interesting thing in the world, so I could see it being interesting. I just don't want to see this Gambit film that now it's like, Channing Tatum has signed a 7-picture deal. We're going to see Gambit in 4 movies in 5 years. Like, just make it a fun Gambit standalone film. Don't try to tie it into some overarching mythology that you're trying to be.
Does he need to grow hair?
Yes, he does need to grow a little bit of hair.
Yeah, he needs to grow it out a little bit.
But why would we not want him to do a 7-movie contract? Yeah. I agree that, like, I would like to see X-Men back at Marvel, but if we're going there, let's have him in all the movies as Gambit.
Put
I
Gambit
agree,
in the X-Men. He's like Wolverine's rival. It's perfect.
Yeah. They just have such a great chemistry with the cast that they have right now. If you start throwing in more and more and more, you know, you're going to start pushing everyone else to the margin.
The cast that they have, you mean like the two guys that are in it?
Yeah, James McAvoy and the other one.
Here's
and
what Fassbender. I mean,
and Hugh Jackman's steroid corpse.
Just opens up a good question, though, of the X-Men the X-Men universe that they're creating, where apparently Apocalypse is the end of a lot of their contracts. I think they signed for 3. Who knows if they'll come back? Jennifer Lawrence, all those people.
Yeah.
And then we know sort of where it goes, thanks to the end of Days of Future Past, where Gambit has never existed in the later.
He was in the bathroom in that epilogue.
Taking
the dump.
Fair enough.
I don't know who does or doesn't exist anymore.
It was a big mess.
I take it back.
Correct. They were going to fix it.
No idea.
And it didn't do
but do we actually want Gambit and continue? Do we want this continued X-Men universe? And where do we see it going after Apocalypse? Is Gambit a good way to anchor that?
Of course, we want it to go back to Marvel and to be a different thing and to have the continuity clear. But if we're going to do this, if we're in it with Fox and the only way we're going to get X-Men movies, like, we would like it to go forward and have a team that resembles the X-Men kind of come out of this. It's going to be Jean and Scott, they're saying, in the next movies. And, like, we want a team, like, we want this to sort of come together and hopefully end up in a spot where we've got, like, a cool X-Men team. The last movie, where was the X-Men team? We didn't have it. It was a bunch of, like, disparate scenes.
It was a love triangle, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, the main thing, which is Wolverine and Professor, and, like, where was the team? And then, like, Moody Beast that isn't funny or anything. Boring!
But Marvel's been down this road before. One of the mistakes they made when they said, oh, we're going to make a standalone Wolverine movie. Awesome. But then they built it into the mythology, and then all of a sudden you had this weird standalone movie that wasn't quite a standalone movie, and the timeline didn't make sense because it was tied into every other thing. It's like, wait, that was 10 years too late. That was 10 years too early. Why is that person look different because he showed up later? If you make Gambit clean, I'm not saying
we're
you
the
can't,
only ones that care about
I'm not saying stuff. You can't bring him in a little bit later. I don't want to see him in like 8 movies, but don't make his own movie tie in so that it's like, oh, this is exactly where it stands, because Fox has shown that they can't build a coherent X-Men mythology.
It brings a good question. But I'm wrestling with you just as a fan. Like, I like what you're saying. They're going to bring Jean and Scott in, and then great. Now we have a trio with Gambit that they can do for a few more movies, but who plays Jean and Scott? Because James Marsden and they're all the same age.
They're in their 60s.
So right. we would cast a younger version of them, even though they played themselves in a younger version anyway?
This isn't a question about the continuity.
They're off to a bad start.
But is that what we want to see?
And that was a previous movie fight.
We want something.
That question,
who to cast as Cyclops.
Which cat? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But do we, I mean, Do we like that? Can they actually recast them in younger people and still keep
I don't like it, but in this case I'd say I don't care, because Days of Future Past was great. I mean, they've won back my hope that they can make good
Bruce
movies
Class
in this.
Also pretty solid. And,
right, so this new generation, like, we can just take the hand-wavy explanation away from Days of Future Past that, like, oh, that was old and this is new. Like, we don't need to really nitpick as much as we do, as long as they're giving us good movies.
Right, and it's like, yeah, of course, could this be a cleaner continuity and it could be easier and actually, like, make some sense? Yeah, sure it does. But, of course, it's not going to be that. So let's just, like, yeah, okay, we're going to suspend our disbelief. Obviously,
it would have been so much cooler if they had shot that ending of Days of Future Past and saved it for like a decade or something.
Yeah.
And like actually just shot it and got them all in the right age.
Well, sure.
And then just held on to it and like, all right, we're going to do 5-6 more movies and then we'll show like this cool.
But like
thing.
We're getting mad about continuity errors and stuff like that. Comic books do that every year.
Yeah, and
like
they're
like, oh, everything changed.
Yeah, but comic book movies don't. Like that's the whole thing. The whole trend behind these studios is now like we're building a coherent universe and you already have a franchise whose universe is completely incoherent.
I forgot what we're arguing. Taylor Kitsch is
Taylor Kitsch, though, one last thing. Taylor Kitsch plays on Friday Night Lights like a brooding, wounded bear who doesn't talk very much.
Oh, but
like,
when he does.
And look, I'm not saying he's not effective. I love him.
Mike, stop
saying.
By your head because I gave you the point. Excitement has got me excited. I think there's something we can do. Mike's on the board. Yeah. Wow, that's three for each. All right.
Texas forever.
Those are our three main battles. We're going to have to do these a little faster, but this is a tough one. Number four. This comes from on Twitter, round four, at Ghost23 on Twitter. He really throws out an amazing question that I'm really excited to do. Best year in the history of cinema. If we could take one year where a bunch of movies that we love were released and go back and call it the best year of cinema, what would it be? Spencer.
I'm an 80s baby. I'm going to say 1984. How are we going to do this? Are we just going to list every movie that came out? And
I mean,
then we'll...
let's pick our top three or four.
Top three or four? Okay, I have to look at my notes here. Top three, Ghostbusters, Karate Kid. Personal choice, This is Spinal
Tap. You can go five.
Okay. Karate Kid, Ghostbusters, This is Spinal Tap, Terminator, Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, that's pretty damn solid as far as classics, comedies. I mean, just to sneak a few more in there, there's Gremlins, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Nightmare on Elm Street. This is the best year as far as movies you'd actually want to watch. There are more important years in cinema, like 1977 and 60s, where you would, you know, still be teaching those in film school in 100 years. But if you want to do a film festival from one year, 84 is the one.
Well, I'm just ringing over shoulder because that is an impressive year. Dan.
It's going to be tough to do this and compactly because 1999 was, you know, not just a great year for movies. It was a landmark year for cinema. 1999 is what kicked off movies as we know them today. It was a year that completely redefined what we know, and it also led to the emergence of a lot of new filmmakers. So this is going to be hard to do quickly. You had The Matrix, which redefined action films. It's still this, you know, to what we have today. You have The Blair Witch Project, which completely redefined the horror genre. You had movies like South Park, one of the best satires ever made. You had Galaxy Quest, one of the best sci-fi movies of the last 20 years. You had Office Space, which is a cult comedy that people still watch on cable. Boondock Saints, which was an amazingly huge cult film that blew up years later. You had American Pie, which redefined the teen genre. You had Run, Lola, Run, which is a great foreign movie. You had American Movie, which is a great documentary. You had Magnolia, The Hurricane, Man on the Moon, Iron Man, The Insider, American Beauty, Fight Club, The Green Mile, The Sixth Sense, Eyes Wide Shut, Being John Malkovich, Telling Mr. Ripley. It's like a
Mr. Ripley's on the list?
Yes.
Oh, boy. You had me.
Watch that movie again. The performances in that movie are incredible.
Pick your five.
Pick my... that's the thing.
All right,
that movie
well, we're
going
to move on to Mike.
25
landmark movies. And I want you to say, if you need a pen, there's a pen. Asterisk your five. What? While we're talking,
I have broken down my movies into there's different types. And there's
make the question, pick your top five, and I'd be ready.
Can't take the heat, get out of the fight.
Yeah, exactly. All right. You can't, I gotta have some ways to for someone to win because otherwise we're just. Whose movies are better, right?
I'm going to list about 40 now. Okay, there are some great blockbusters. E.T., Blade
what
Runner.
Year?
In 82.
Okay.
E.T., Blade Runner, Wrath of Khan, Tootsie, King of Comedy, Diner with Barry Levinson.
Slow down.
There are scary movies.
I have to also write them down so I can remember what each of your years are. And if you give me 20, I can't. This round will last forever.
Well, then ask us to make a top five.
You should know not to put talented Mr. Ripley on the list.
To be fair, I have Grease 2 on my list.
See, I was.
Yeah, his fifth movie was Diner, and you're yelling at me about talented Mr. Ripley.
I didn't write it down. See, Blade Runner, E.T., Wrath of Khan. That's where I got you.
Poltergeist, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, First Blood.
Okay, yeah.
And then some great, like sort of cult movies. Tron, Last Unicorn.
What?
There are a bunch
I'm
of
counting
last
that one, Dan,
my
okay?
girlfriend loves Last Unicorn, and I would be a real heel. No. Botanicus is much more important to me than Last Unicorn. There are dramatic films like Sophie's Choice, Gandhi, and Fitzcarraldo. Werner Herzog's Fitzcarraldo, starring Klaus Kinski, which is amazing.
Of course.
Wow. Okay.
And Grease 2.
So here's the reason why I'm asking you guys to sort of go through and pick it, because obviously we can say who had the most best movies, and that could be the way we do this, but which ones were the most iconic that really defined it? You made a good point in your first few that there were several that really changed the genre, and I feel like both years also has that, but like, to define the great list, great years, to define it, you can pick six, guys, you can pick
six, you can pick four,
but just give me like a round of how would you define the era and the best movies of that batch, and whoever's ready first, go ahead and tell me.
So I guess we'll do it 1984, because these were, I feel like 99 had a lot of great one-off movies, but these were movies that spawned imitators that really defined their era and eras to come. Ghostbusters, the action comedy. Beverly Hills Cop, I guess that's another action comedy.
Supernatural for Ghostbusters, maybe?
Yeah, Karate Kid, like the ultimate sports movie. The Terminator franchise, Nightmare on Elm Street, horror movies, and Spinal Tap, those like one of my favorites, those Chris Guest mockumentaries. So
You didn't even fit in Temple of Doom.
I didn't even fit in Gremlins or Temple of Doom.
Okay, well, man,
now we have something to contain it with.
The goalposts keep moving, but I'll adjust to that.
So Spencer's point
here was that his movies spawned imitators.
Yep.
So let me read you this list of movies. The Matrix.
Yeah.
How many imitators have there been? The Blair Witch Project. How many imitators have there been?
Well, yeah, you're right.
How many found footage horror movies are there? It is the genre at this point. American Beauty, how many movies Pay It Forward, one of the worst movies ever, but how many people tried to replicate the success of that film?
I don't know.
American Pie, how many knockoffs of American Pie were
That's
there?
That's Porky's.
Which came out in 1982.
But American Pie...
Oh, come on. Beverly Hills Cop and Ghostbusters were the first action movies.
American Pie reintroduced that teen movie genre back into, like... Then, instead of being three of those a year, there were all of a sudden 20 of those every year for the next 5 years.
Got it, fair.
Magnolia. How many people tried to do what P.T. Anderson did with Magnolia? And that was the movie, like... Before Magnolia, like, P.T. Anderson was the Boogie Nights guy. Magnolia was when people were like, oh, that's a P.T. Anderson movie. He wasn't just the guy who made Boogie Nights. He was a director that people... Being John Malkovich. Spike Jonze, like that whole tone, the fact that you can make a movie like that, how many people said,
Magnolia,
okay, I'm going to make...
Yeah, they're both so idiosyncratic, like they really launched those two people's careers. I don't think
exactly.
That or
they
the last
brought,
one launched genres.
1999 was the year that launched P.T. Anderson and Spike Jonze's like into the mainstream, like these are filmmakers
no doubt,
that matter.
There's no doubt 99 was a defining year for cinema.
But
Mike, what's your... Pick, give me yours.
Okay, I got a good point, though.
Go ahead. Sorry.
How many bands had imitated Creed, is what I'm saying. How many bands came out of Creed? I don't know that
Never
that's the
enough.
Best argument for it. The movie should stand on their own, and these movies stand on their own. E.T., Blade Runner, Wrath of... Like, E.T., Blade Runner, Wrath of Khan, that should be enough. But then you go add in something like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, that thing, that is influenced, if we want to use that argument, for years to come. Was that four?
Yep.
What do I got?
You can go five, six. Don't give me 20.
Then Sophie's Choice and Gandhi. Again, those movies that you want to watch once that are great movies, but they have to be on the list. There has to be stuff in there that are movies in there like that.
I'd like to change my argument for 1984. These are now movies that stand on their own as great movies across all time.
Well, I mean, listen, every year has great movies in it. There's not a year where there wasn't a great movie made. But, like, both of these years had some really, really great movies that do stand on their own and stand the test of time. But if we're talking best year, 1999 redefined movies as we know them, and that was the first year of the modern era of cinema.
But upon reassessing some of those movies, you said they're not quite that good.
Yeah, here's what I was going to say, because I agree with you 100%. 99 is one of the years I would pick immediately. But I feel like, with the exception of Matrix, mm-hmm. I feel like the rest of it really is just it's more like that you're finding your filmmakers, where I feel like it did change the style of filmmaking, and just there was a style that was just made in that year. But some of these movies, I don't know if they hold up as well.
The Sixth Sense is Magnolia. Still a great movie.
Yeah, American Pie is great, but I mean,
being it's John Malkovich doesn't
Pie
hold
is
up.
Not Ghostbusters.
South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut doesn't
Fast
hold
times.
Up. Galaxy
Fast
Quest
times,
doesn't hold up. The
like,
Iron Giant doesn't hold up. The Insider
well, that's
doesn't
a new
hold
one
up.
I'm just hearing
yeah,
about
just hearing that.
Election doesn't hold up.
That over American Pie.
But again, I gotta argue a little bit of semantics because it's who's making the best argument, and everyone's just argument is that their movies are better.
Our movies are better.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find something.
And my year,
you know how hard this job is.
And my year redefined movies.
I think they all
yeah,
did.
But
to
what's
be honest,
the best year, not what's
an
the most redefining.
With all of these years, that some E.T. didn't define movies in '82.
E.T. was a hugely popular movie, but did it
Mac
redefine
and me would
movies
not exist
as we know
if
it?
E.T. did not exist.
Well, that's a point against you, except for that wheelchair scene.
Well, how many bad Matrix movies were there after the Matrix? Nope,
two.
Well,
how many, how many bad Blair Witch movies? There's a lot of these.
So let's just go on. What's the best movies? '84.
82.
No, that wasn't what year had the best movies. Is what was the best year.
But I'm going to have to do it. Pick the two best movies. I got to find something here because this is tough. Give me your two best movies that could trump any movie, that these are the best movies. I'm not saying that's going to make the winner, but pick them. You get two choices out of your filmography there. What are the two best movies?
Stands are
American, hold up today.
American Pie and
like
Ghostbusters Terminator.
Let's say the two best movies. If you're gonna go on
Blade
a battle
Runner.
Against your movies versus some of these other movies, you got to pick the two best movies, which means a lot. You got to factor a lot of things.
Ghostbusters Terminator.
You're picking Ghostbusters
E.T.
and Terminator.
Blade Runner.
Okay? So you're defining your year of '84 with Terminator and Ghostbusters.
The dark and the light. Yeah.
Okay, Mike.
E.T. and Blade Runner.
Okay, and then Dan.
I mean, I guess it'd probably be, the Matrix, and I mean, just for quality and humor, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut is an amazing movie.
Your job now, Andy. Good luck, buddy.
Well, I mean, here's my problem. I mean, I feel like E.T. is probably the best out of all of them.
That's what I think.
But I wouldn't put Blade Runner in the same category as Ghostbusters
but it's
or
better
even
than
Matrix.
But it's better than Terminator.
I feel like Ghostbusters and Matrix, I'm going to get heat for it, but I don't know. Ghostbusters and Matrix defined a little harder to me than Blade Runner did. South Park, I agree with you, and it really did define the movie, but it's from the TV show. I don't know. It's hard to compare.
One of the best satires of the last 15 years.
It
is. Terminator is a great movie, but Terminator 2, I
Terminator
feel like,
is
a better movie. A lot
year.
Of people will argue, and I feel like that defined 91.
How do you feel about Karate Kid?
oh, man, this is really, really hard.
Man on the moon.
I don't, Jason, hurricane. Any facts or anything you can throw in here to help me make a decision?
I have an interesting fact. Each of these years has a space movie in them, a big space movie in each of them.
Yeah.
It is...
what's the 84?
84 is Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Well, I don't want to have to argue based on that.
That's like an anger way.
You tell me
years
what's
down.
The worst wait, movie?
I'm a Star Trek fan.
I just said
fan
each of these, it's interesting
that
each
the
of
save
these
the
years,
one, right?
They were all in the top 10. Four. Search for Spock was in the top 10 of the film. His is Wrath of Khan, and then we have
Can
Phantom
you help
Menace.
Me actually find the worst movie of every year?
Phantom Menace.
The worst
What is the worst movie of every year?
You're hurting my argument.
Well, I think there's only one Wrath of Khan. That's where I'm going.
Hell yeah.
Oh, really? Whoa. He didn't even bring it up.
The worst movie of...
I'm trying to find some way
Jason,
to find
you and me, we'll
wins.
Go head-to-head on what you had the best Star Trek movie, but that's not the fight
that's
we're
coming
having.
Coming up.
Why don't you have us pick a top four? That's the only number we haven't done yet.
This is sort of apples and oranges at a point, and no one's given me an argument that's like, oh, well, you've made a better argument, because you're
really?
All making fantastic arguments. You all have fantastic movies of each defined
okay,
of
you. You're having your friends over to have a movie night. Which pool do you want to pick from?
Yeah, that's
they're defending
one.
Their movies passionately. I'm defending
if,
my year
in that
passionately.
Regard, I would go with 99. I'd watch The Matrix and South Park.
Oh.
But I didn't say that's the winner.
Oh, what?
Oh!
Oh, it's the premature.
No, they're defending the movies.
Is there anything else anyone wants to quantify? Because you just gave Dan a point.
Dan is just defending
ask me
the
more
year
questions
99.
Of what year would I want to go do to this.
What was your favorite year to be alive?
I was alive in all of those years. I only remember 99. Dan wins again. Uh-oh.
Whatever. I'm over it.
Anything else?
No. It's your job, man. You're the judge.
Well, I mean, You got me anything on the worst movies of the year?
Worst movies.
So I can cancel one out?
Worst movie of 1984 is this movie called Best Defense.
Oh, no.
Worst movie of 1999 is Baby Geniuses.
No, that was good.
And, or Phantom Menace.
Yeah, Phantom Menace. And then the worst movie of 1982 is apparently Grease 2.
Yeah, that's
a pretty bad movie.
Grease 2 is the word.
So never even Grease heard 2, of the worst Baby Geniuses, and Best Defense.
Well, I mean, again, Death Dan gets it.
All right.
Because of those points, and I think it did define a lot of filmmaking. And when you go through your list, I feel like you had the longest list.
I did.
I could have kept going.
Well, yeah. Fair. To be fair, more movies were made in 1999 as well.
But that's a murderer's row of great movies.
But it was so. Whether it was right or wrong,
Footloose,
how we got there,
story,
I'm still not sure. But
I almost didn't put Talented Mr. Ripley on there.
Death Wish 2.
But it's a great performance.
All right, we got to zoom through these because we're getting tight. This is a long episode.
Oh, boy.
And I want to get to our speed round. So let's try and do these a little quicker. Round 5. Sony recently announced that it has licensed several movie properties to be theme parks, including Ghostbusters in Dubai. So this brings up our round 5 fight. What would be a great movie ride? So I'm starting with you, Dan, and let's go a little faster.
Okay, boy. All right. I'd like to say, the question is what would be a great movie ride, not what would be the most socially acceptable movie ride. So
yes.
I'm going to go with Titanic the Ride.
Yep.
Based on the movie, it would combine the best parts of It's a Small World and Splash Mountain. You start off on a boat, you're traveling through, you got the projection screen, you see him on the front of the boat. I can fly, Jack! Then the lights go down, you see the iceberg right ahead! Then you start slowly ratcheting up, you get about a 45 degree angle, and boom, that's your first fall. Just like the movie, the ship's sinking, and then it cracks in half, so you got a big 45
just
degree
like the
drop.
Earthquake experience at Universal.
Exactly. Yeah. So then, the real ride begins. You start the slow ride back up as far as safety will allow to a 90 degree vertical drop straight down. The ship sinks. You go back. You got Celine Dion. You get in line. You ride again.
Okay.
Really insensitive, but an awesome, awesome ride.
I think you missed a huge opportunity saying that you will get wet.
Oh, you'll definitely get wet.
Well, you know, you'd have to have the water effects, and then you cling to a door at the end that everyone could fit on, but most
of
the
time. Stop helping him. Stop helping him.
Mike.
All right, Labyrinth the Ride, all right?
Walk me through it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of dark rides at Disneyland, which are like Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean. This is like Haunted Mansion and Peter Pan. We start out in Sarah's room at the start. Goblins all of a sudden show up, and then there's an owl that flies through the window and turns into Jareth the Goblin King, a.k.a. audio animatronic David Bowie, okay? He sings a quick song to you, and then you're off to the labyrinth. We meet Hoggle. He's urinating in the water like he is in the movie. Obviously, this can't be at Disney. This might be a Universal ride. Yeah. That's fine, okay?
Sounds like then, Universal ride.
Then we make our way into the labyrinth, and all of the famous scenes come out. The one where the hands are all, well, they go down that weird chute, and the hands are reaching out. That's pretty cool and creepy. We get to the part where Jareth is hanging out with all of his goblins, and he's holding up a baby. Robot David Bowie holding up a robot baby, folks. We want that, all right?
Yes. It's just a fact. We do.
We want it. And then, look, so we see Sir Didymus, which is that little dog that rides on top of the other dog. Mm-hmm. We see the big one that is, like, really gentle, but, like, he's, you know what I mean?
You
he's
forget
like a strong
their names,
guy.
Mike? Come on.
Hold on.
Why
I can't read this
that?
Fast. It's
you
hard. I'm trying Sir to go Didymus. Fast, you guys. Sir Didymus. And then we get to the end, which is where that, like, M.C. Escher with the stairs, and then we kind of go through that. And this is all going to be practical. It's all going to be animatronic. I don't want any digital projection. That's the stuff that really bums me out when I go to a theme park, except for Star Tours, which is amazing.
Mike, does it bother you that no one under 30 will understand or want
a
to ride
you
your
said.
Ride?
Let me make this point. The fact that no one's seen Labyrinth doesn't matter. I don't particularly care for the Cars films. I love Cars Land. Cars Land is the best.
But Cars Land races you around. I mean, this is a kiddie ride.
Yeah, but it's filled with magic and wonder.
What does your ride do?
What do you mean, what does it do?
Do you just sit there?
Yeah, it's like the Haunted Mansion. You just sit
it's
there
like
and you
Peter
go
Pan.
Through
yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
all
right,
an actual
all right, we'll get to it. Spencer, let's get
your
cool. in before
Speaking
we...
of racing around, we all know Universal Studios Hollywood is boring, and it's not a fun experience. We also know that there is a bus that takes you from the parking lot to the park itself. Imagine you get on this bus. You see where I'm going. You get on this bus, and an out-of-work character actor pulls next to you and goes, bomb on bus! Bomb on bus!
Socially unacceptable thing.
Well, you've been randomly selected to be on Speed, the ride, the experience. So, from now on, we know how it goes.
You have to be somewhere.
You have to be Universal Studios. So, you are going up that hill to Universal Studios, but you can't go less than 50 miles an hour. It obviously slides onto a track at that point. So, you're going over 50. There's plants inside the bus, so someone shoots the driver and someone else has to take over. And there's drama like, oh, we gotta loop the camera, we gotta loop the camera. And then you, oh no, the road's out! And then
do they hit the shopping cart and then you go, it's just cans!
Cans! It's just cans!
It's just cans!
And then it hits the jump, you go over the jump, and then everyone gets off onto another moving kind of emergency trolley can then slow down. Finally, you're at Universal Studios. The rest of your day is going to pale by comparison.
So you don't know that you're getting on speed.
You don't know. That's part of the experience.
So you're going to scare the crap out of somebody.
Yeah, we are. You'll have to sign a waiver before you take the shuttle to Universal Studios that you might be pre-selected
for
Speed the Ride.
That sounds fun, but we're arguing, I don't mean to argue semantics, what would make the best ride? Obviously, the people would say, no, we can't make this. This isn't feasible. It is scary to
the... Spencer also made an argument for you. Why isn't there a labyrinth in yours?
There is. I said we would go to the labyrinth.
But they're on a car.
Going fast.
But if I'm going to a ride called... If I'm going to a ride called labyrinth, I'm like, shouldn't I be walking through a maze or something?
It was such a layup. It's a labyrinth.
Is that the line queue?
But then it's a walkthrough attraction, and that has to be a lot different. I know theme parks, you guys. It has to be a different thing. They wanted the Haunted Mansion to originally be. Walt wanted it to be a walkthrough attraction, but then you have to do a lot of different things to keep people from messing with all the effects and stuff. So that's the problem.
I'm just bringing some spice to boring-ass Universal Studios where they try to do part theater, part ride. Speed would do it.
I'm not saying that's not cool and exciting. I'm just saying it's impractical. Your ride is like the slowest moving ride.
Yeah, I challenge your ride too a bit. Is the earthquake ride really the best ride?
Well, no, made the earthquake ride comparison.
You said it was
like the earthquake experience.
You said yes.
Does the earthquake ride?
It was a trick.
This is a setup.
Yeah.
Dan, you're winning.
Does the earthquake Does the earthquake ride have two flume ride drops, one at a 45-degree angle, the one as close to vertical as we can get? The earthquake ride, you just sit there. This is like Splash Mountain and the Tower of Terror combined into one.
You also mentioned, in support of your idea, Celine Dion.
She's the cooldown music.
You have to listen to Celine Dion to get through this.
Because you're so terrified. You gotta get the heart rate.
Answer me this. Is there a moment in the line queue where you step on the ship and can do the picture?
Definitely.
For like $10, you can
Some studio executive is going to make that note that says we have to have that to take pictures, so we'll probably have it.
As a designer,
I wouldn't add that personally. I think it's kind of lame.
I was helping you. Why did you take that away?
It's overdone. This is about thrills, not romance.
Let's remember how long it took the Titanic.
I hate being bored in the line. I want something to do.
Yeah.
The Titanic took like hours to sink.
Well, it's not going to be in real time. Is your labyrinth ride going to be an hour and a half long?
Well, if I had my driver. Well,
the line of Titanic would be the best part. You start below decks, you get to the upper part.
Imagine you're strapped to the Titanic for an hour and a half just going, oh, boy.
Again, if you want to make that argument, but that's not what my ride is. It's not earthquake experience, and it's not 3 hours long.
You have to snap the thing in half in a second.
Yeah, that's what's going to be so fun about it.
And then you drown?
No! You guys are making terrible arguments about this because you know it's a great ride.
Don't look at me. They're talking to you.
It's not speedy.
No.
It's also not going to give some 87-year-old grandmother a heart attack because she thinks this is a terrorist.
She signed a waiver.
Yours might.
You know what you're getting into on Titanic. You're not just going to get hijacked on the way the Universal Studios
here's
with your
problem.
Grandson.
Neither of your rides are ever getting made.
Well, okay.
And so
yours is putting everyone to sleep.
Does the Haunted Mansion put you to sleep?
With some minor adjustments, you can make Speed the Ride into something you sign up for.
What's fun about yours is the unexpectedness.
Yeah, yeah.
Without that, it's
yours
gone.
Is like one of those Halloween, like those haunted houses.
Yeah,
where
you only do it during Halloween.
They put a bag over your head.
That's what all the kids are into these days.
This is what would be a great movie ride. It's not asking what's allowed.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I went with Titanic.
Robot David Bowie singing songs.
That'd be great for everybody born after night or before 1980.
Without a labyrinth.
That would not be a great movie ride. That'd be an interesting experience, but I want a ride.
Yeah.
Yours isn't a ride.
I think Pirates...
My problem with yours is more a stunt show.
Yeah, that you're part of.
Dan's is the ride. Dan wins!
Are you serious?
So boring.
Unbelievable.
You just don't want him to pout for the rest of the episode.
He hasn't been pouting during the episode? Yeah. Pouting the whole show.
Everybody likes the water ride.
Andy, sorry. You don't get to talk to me about pouting on the panel.
Oh. Fair enough. This is my first time. I didn't know how to lose. Okay, round six. We've got to rush through because we're way too late. Oh, let's do this. Round six. They're announcing that Game of Thrones is going to be on IMAX screens, which is pretty exciting. They're going to do the last two episodes of season four. In IMAX, which brought up a good question. Round six. What TV show would you want to see on an IMAX screen? And we're going to start with Mike. What TV show on an IMAX screen?
For IMAX, you watch IMAX because you want everything to be enhanced. The sound, the picture, everything. It's going to immerse you more. Adventure Time. This is a show that is so great. It's funny. It is action-packed. It is epic. The reason you put a movie on IMAX is because there's some sort of an epicness going on. It's got a scope to it. And there's episodes of Adventure Time that absolutely fit this qualification. There's episodes with the Lich, which is like the scariest version of death. There's an episode where Finn is just desperately trying to get his father to stay, and he gets his arm, spoiler alert, I'm so sorry, his arm ripped off in the process. There's beautiful artwork on this, and I want to see all of this, and I want to see it projected.
You want to see the existing example? Are they remastering this to fill?
Yeah, are
the
we SpongeBob in it?
Yeah, remaster it, sure.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I'll go next. I love Adventure Time too, but I don't think it gets any more cinematic by making it bigger. What's already cinematic is True Detective. True Detective is like one of the most beautiful looking TV shows in recent memory. It's got the showrunner Cary Fukunaga. Yeah, I'll go with that.
I'm like, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
He
directed one of my favorite movies, Sin Nombre, which is this beautiful movie about escaping this MS-13 gang, and he brings that cinematic feel to television. And just on the strength of that 1 6-minute-long tracking shot alone where Matthew McConaughey is robbing the biker, or they're robbing the drug house. Yep. I mean, my heart stopped, and I was watching that on a laptop, like on something the size of YouTube. Imagine seeing that in IMAX. I would poop myself. So.
Dan.
I would puke on myself because it'd be way too big for that. The thing about TV that's tough is it's shot for TV, so it's not meant to be blown up to three stories tall. So, you know, if you watch True Detective in IMAX, half the movie you're going to be looking at a 30-foot tall, like, McConaughey eyeball.
Yeah, a movie star. You're also looking at movie stars, not TV actors.
You know, I went with a TV show that doesn't have the creative cachet of these two, but I would go watch Survivor in IMAX. It's shot in beautiful locations. It already has these great sweeping vista shots, these wide helicopter shots of the island. You have those challenges that are these huge water challenges that are like these, you know, amazing obstacle courses that are like, you know, 40 feet long. You got people running up and down stuff. You already have all the crane shots. You got the dolly shots. You have the drama with the contestants. You've got the beautiful location. And I think that makes the most sense. A drama, a TV drama in IMAX and an animated show on IMAX, for me, I think those work great on television. I don't know how well they would work in the big format.
So you don't want to see Matthew McConaughey on the big screen, but you do want to see, like, Richard Hatch's, like, wrinkled, sunburned
body. Well, no,
because
that was an SD. So.
Boston Rob, maybe.
Yeah.
But Jeff Probst you would like to see on an IMAX screen.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. So, let me ask this.
Who wouldn't want to see Probst?
Do you want to watch every week of Survivor in IMAX?
No, but if they had a Survivor, kind of like with Game of Thrones, if they had a Survivor IMAX episode, I'd be like, yeah, I'll go see it.
That would reinvigorate a dead franchise. I'm sorry.
It's a great show. It's a great show.
My question, though, is that show... I do love that show. It's a fun, guilty pleasure of mine. But the problem I have with that show is it's a weekly... Yeah, everything... It's sort of the same old, and it's a weekly thing. So how... What is the finale? I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, it'd be
this is going to be a question. I'd be like, which specific episode? I think you answered. It's that... It's
yeah.
It's the crime raid.
Yeah.
But like, what... I'm trying to... Because I like the idea, but I'm sort of struggling with...
Well, it'd be like Game of Thrones.
I have to see that, my episode that week in IMAX?
It'd be like...
Before it continues?
No, it'd be like Game of Thrones, where it's just like, hey, we're gonna, you know, I mean, Survivor's an older franchise, it's still good, but they're gonna need publicity.
Survivor?
No, but if they said, hey, we're gonna do the season finale in IMAX, I'd go see it.
See, I'd be worried it would just get spoiled, or I wouldn't be able to see it in time, and there's something...
Well,
fun.
What if it was on at the same time?
As a Survivor fan, there's something I'm challenging of, like, there's something about the eventized programming of watching Survivor, where it's like, it's so monumental on who gets kicked out and who wins the challenge.
Well, that's the event, though. It would be like this, if it's like the night of the season finale, they're like, hey, this
so it's a one-time
season finale will be on an IMAX. I'd definitely be interested in seeing
that. It's a fun ratings gimmick. I think that episode of True Detective would be a real cinematic experience.
From a rewatching perspective, yes, I give you that a little bit more. But your finale thing is interesting. Give me the answer on Adventure Time. Like, what would you pick?
The season finale of last season was about Lemon Hope, which is the little lemon savior for the lemon people. He goes back and he stops the lemon grab from enslaving his people. And then at the end, there's this very touching moment when we flash way forward and we see old Lemon Hope, and there's a sad Princess Bubblegum song being played, and we see like the ruined, like we see the ruined land, and we see like how dystopian this future has become even more, and it's like so cinematic and so sad, and if you saw it on a giant screen, everybody in there would be weeping. It's so
well
moving.
And what's interesting about your idea, and I don't know how feasible it even be, but like, would they actually, can they just expand that out to fit IMAX, or would they animate additional content to make that become
well,
an IMAX
it's in widescreen already, so obviously it's not in the exact same aspect ratio, so I'm sure they could.
Well,
they could do either.
You get into a lot of geeky questions like, yeah, "What's the source resolution? Is it 4K?"
Like, certainly, like it's a taller frame, and they could animate something.
But I guess
on top
because you said originally you'd remaster it. Is that, or would you just show the version, you know, blown up? Or are they actually doing some work to it?
I think it would work either way. But I mean, it would be cool if they like really filled up the frame. I mean, I'll let them decide that. I don't want to be their boss.
Fair enough. And now I challenge everyone: which one would you watch that's not yours?
Adventure Time. I'm not a Survivor fan.
True Detective.
I've never actually seen Adventure Time. I hear it's great, so by default, I would go with True Detective.
Mike?
True Detective.
I should have picked Survivor! Never mind, wait, Survivor!
Spencer wins! That's what I was leaning on anyway. That was my little secret trick to get you guys to vote for me. Alright, good. Spencer's on the board again.
Right.
Round... Crap. Round 7. I'm looking at
round
the clock.
Round crap.
Oh, boy.
Round 7. Let's do this. Right, this is a tough one, but yeah, this is going to be hard. So let's get our... I know that's what this is in advance. Let's just get to it. On Twitter, Tin Can Bandits asked us, in light of the critical success of Big Eyes, what is the best Tim Burton movie? Round 7.
All right.
This is tough, and we're starting with you, Spencer.
Yeah, I'll try to make it quick. I don't know. I forgot what you guys picked, but hopefully preempting your arguments, he didn't direct Nightmare Before Christmas, and he didn't write Beetlejuice. So the remaining answer for me that he wrote and directed is Edward Scissorhands. You have the first pairing of him and weird, pale Johnny Depp when it actually worked. And it works because he doesn't really say much in the whole movie. He just goes, thank you, okay. And it's the perfect combination of Tim Burton's like weird goth kid meets suburbia, and it's got all the practical, cool effects and sets before he went all CG.
Dan?
My choice is actually his first movie. It's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And a lot of it's for kind of the same reason. It's Tim Burton at his purest before he started either doing big budget movies that forced him to incorporate more studio stuff or before he just went off the deep end. Like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, from the Danny Elfman music to the performances to all the crazy contraptions and stuff, just the quirkiness, the tone of it. I think that's the most pure Tim Burton film. And for me, you know, it may not be the most award-winning one, but it's the one that if I'm going to pick one to sit down and watch, it's going to be Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It holds up. It's hilarious. It's not a kiddie movie, which a lot of people seem to think it is. It's this really kind of quirky comedy road movie, and it still makes me laugh, and I've been watching it since I was 5 years old.
Love both of these. Mike.
All right. I love both of those, too. But the one I always come back to is Ed Wood. That has my favorite Tim Burton, Johnny Depp performance in it. It's super funny. I can watch this thing anytime you put it on. It's got performances. Bill Murray is in it. Jeffrey Jones. I don't want to talk about that, but he's great in it. Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oscar-winning Martin Landau.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a love letter almost to film and to optimism, and I just love it.
That's tough. They're all fantastic movies.
They're great movies.
I will say to your, it's the purest Tim Burton argument. Like, when I think Tim Burton, I think goth. I think goth with, like, a lighthearted tone. And Edward Scissorhands really brings that more to me than Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, this is an argument that's going to happen a lot when we're calling best Tim Burton.
And also, isn't that sort of a Paul Reubens movie? And
he created the character.
I don't want this to become a thing, but it's good to tell the audience and our panelists that we have to factor that in because it's hard to pick out of these three. We got to find something. It's a debate show.
No, they're all three great movies.
Is Pee-wee the best? I mean, tell me, because I think there's probably an argument that it is, but how is it a Tim Burton movie? movie.
It's got the, for me, it's got the most kind of like he kind of developed into this gothy big dangly tree filmmaker. But his sensibilities have always been kind of skewed and off kilter and quirky. And for me, that's what set Pee-wee's Big Adventure apart. Is that that's the entire movie? There are just these little, and it's never explained. What is this weird world where all of this is normal? But, you know, nobody notices that Pee-wee is 30 years old and he's arguing with his other 30-year-old neighbor who takes a bath in a bathtub. It's all completely normal. And for me, that's Tim Burton's sensibility, is this kind of idea of just, like, these abnormal things in a normal world and how they fit and, you know, interact with each other.
Describes Edward Scissorhands, too. And that's the movie that he's been trying to recreate ever since. He keeps bringing Johnny Depp back, keeps putting him in pale makeup and trying to recreate the magic of that one.
And that's why I think Ed Wood is the best, because Ed Wood is almost a bit of an outlier. It's a little bit different than all of his other movies. And he's never, like, it's sort of a biography, but it's like almost a pure comedy as well. Like, I understand that, like, we've seen now different, like, 10 different versions of Edward Scissorhands. He's not done a movie like Ed Wood since. I mean, he's tried a little bit, tried to infuse maybe Dark Shadows, but nothing has come anywhere close, and it's almost this really unique thing in his filmography.
Do you thematically think it is it's fair to call it a Tim Burton movie in a way? How so?
Oh, because he made it? Because
it's Johnny Depp in it.
I agree that, like, he's a man who likes the macabre, and he likes weird little things and, like, claymation and stuff, but I don't think that you can judge. It has to be that for me to judge that it's the best movie.
But I'm trying to help you here because Ed Wood a lot. But
fair enough.
Isn't Ed Wood almost even a biopic of himself in a way? Like, of Ed Wood being the ultimate iconic quirky guy, and he took sort of that way of. I mean,
Good point, Andy. You're saying that there's a lot of Tim Burton in Ed Wood.
Yes,
he obviously admires it. He admires him in a weird way. Obviously, like, he is not the same filmmaker where he does only one take and when George Animal Steel knocks into the docks into the thing. But, like, yeah, I don't know. What am I talking about? I agree with what you're saying. I don't know.
Good point, Andy.
Well, the problem is, even before I helped him that, I do think it's his best movie.
Yeah.
I think it's the best movie he's made. But the problem is, these are fantastic movies. They're all great. They're all Tim Burton movies. But there's almost a way where thanks to the genius of these two movies, he was able to finally make something. And it's the only time I agree with what you said, that he's really been able to top himself and do away in a non-Tim Burton-y way, still make a really great film. So I got to go with Ed Wood.
Oh, okay. Oh,
thank you.
All right.
Shocker.
Yeah, the one you argued for. Yeah. Nice.
Well, it's best Tim Burton movie, and I felt like I had to try and figure it out. He did give some of those points.
I love it.
It was a total great movie.
He didn't ask what was Tim Burton's best movie. There's a difference.
Well, I think it is a Tim Burton movie.
We need to come up with, like, a style guide.
Or you just need to ask ahead of time. Round 8. All right, last one. Since our honest trailer next week is a murder mystery with a Ben Affleck, ooh, that's your tease. Mm. We thought it would be fun to ask for round 8, worst Ben Affleck movie. And we're starting with you, Dan.
Well, this is going to be hard for the guy that just was arguing for Titanic the Ride, but it's Pearl Harbor, because it's not only is it a terrible movie, it is patently offensive to anybody who was alive during Pearl Harbor or was at Pearl Harbor or knows anything or anyone that was ever involved with Pearl Harbor. I can't imagine how angry I would be if in 30 years somebody made a movie about September 11th that was as ridiculous as Pearl Harbor. I can only imagine some old veteran sitting in Pearl Harbor watching this ass clown get popped in the nose with a champagne cork an hour in and going, what the hell is this movie? It's not only, and Michael Bay made it look like there's a way to do war, like, battle scenes right with reverence. Steven Spielberg did it with D-Day. Michael Bay's whole point with Pearl Harbor was to make people watch the Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor and go, like, oh, that's cool. Whoa. Like, the shot of the bomb falling on the thing. That was in a Super Bowl ad. The murder of American soldiers was the money shot for the movie. And my last point, let's not forget that Pearl Harbor was so bad, it got its own song in Team America, including the line, I need you like Ben Affleck needs acting school.
All right.
Good point there at the end.
This is a hard category. It's like picking which of my children I like the least. And here's my thinking. I'm going to pick Reindeer Games because it's a movie I saw and don't remember anything about. I've seen Pearl Harbor. I remember a lot of it. I'm not saying it's good, but it's memorable. And I'm guessing that what your choice, I'm going to remember a lot of things too. So my choice is bad because of how unmemorable it is. I'm not even going to make any other points.
Okay, yeah, Spencer. Keep it quick. My answer is Daredevil, or as I call it, Stupid Blind Batman Attorney at Law. Because not only was it bad on its own terms, it actually ruined a franchise, and then also spawned a mini-franchise in Elektra, which was horrible. And to the point of Pearl Harbor, I think Michael Bay is what ruined Pearl Harbor and Josh Hartnett to a lesser extent, not Ben Affleck.
Good well, point. Here we go again.
Here we go again. Even you just said that Michael Bay made it cool with the explosions.
Reading. Worst Ben Affleck
your
movie.
Your arguments were Michael Bay points. Yeah, but we're it is a Ben Affleck
okay,
question.
Okay, fine. Ben Affleck is terrible in the movie.
He was terrible in this.
Tell
he
me
was
why.
Also terrible.
He's supposed to be like one part of this like really emotional love triangle. The guy, I mean, he couldn't act.
Yeah, it was a triangle. It was him, Hartnett, and what's her face.
Yeah, and he was terrible. Like, you know,
Kate Beckinsale.
We've been making this argument all day. Pearl Harbor is the worst movie that Ben Affleck has been in. Ben Affleck is terrible in Pearl Harbor. Mike was right. Reindeer Games was bad, but he's also right. It's forgettable. You remember the really bad movies, and I remember Pearl
but no
Harbor.
One picked them, which are Geely and Jersey Girl.
Those are so bad, they're hilarious.
No one
though.
Picked them, and honestly, they're worse than all the ones you picked.
Okay.
But Geely is so bad, it's
Geely's
good.
So bad, it's good.
I guess these are bordering on so bad, it's good.
You need
mine
to,
is just such in the
you
middle.
Have seen Ben Affleck's mind about being the cock or whatever?
Yeah, you need to pause this right now if you're still listening and Google Geely yoga scene.
Geely.
Yeah. Geely yoga scene.
Christopher Walken talking about Marie.
So it's hard to give any because you all ignored the most obvious win, which was
that's so bad it's good.
It's so bad,
it goes
it's
full
good.
Circle.
It's so
but
bad
he did
it's
it
good.
Knowing it was right. He didn't. He wasn't in he on the joke.
No, he was not.
Say a little thing about the Michael Bay being only responsible for Pearl Harbor. I would make the argument that Mark Steven Johnson, the director of Daredevil, also directed Elektra and both Ghost Rider. So he probably ruined Daredevil just as much as Ben Affleck.
And
did.
Daredevil wasn't like. It wasn't like Ghost Rider bad. It wasn't great. But it wasn't the worst movie of all time. Pearl Harbor was also it's almost 3 hours long, which just adds it to the list of why this is so insufferable.
Spencer, Daredevil arguments here?
Yeah, it was just so bland. I think it took a
Ben Affleck specific ones.
He was so boring in it. I mean, it was just yeah. I don't have any Ben Affleck specific ones. It was just a bad franchise, and it took a character down with him.
Forgettable, boring, terrible.
To
movie.
Me, bad is unmemorable.
Well, they're all bad
movies.
Yeah. Unmemorable. I mean, come
but
on.
Pearl Harbor is awful.
I mean, but again, I blame Michael Bay for it in a way. But I don't know. I put them all in the same category. There, I probably enjoyed Reindeer Games slightly more.
But it's just a bunch of just a bunch of Santa shooting at each other.
So it really becomes a little bit. We're talking about which ones do we enjoy the most. Reindeer Games is kind of stupid fun. It didn't offend me. Whereas Daredevil and Pearl Harbor. Right? They offended us. Is that fair to say?
Pearl Harbor offended a nation.
And Daredevil offended comic book fans, which is even more egregious.
And we're still talking about those two, and we're not talking about Reindeer Games, which makes it the worst.
So I'm going to give Spencer and Dan points.
All right. Wow. The rare double technical.
The rare double points. Okay. By doing that, that puts us at Dan with 4 points, Mike with 2 points, and Spencer, wow, luckily you got 3 points. Oof. There. So that eliminates you, Mike. I apologize. It was a close one, though. Dan is in the lead. We have we have to do this fast, and it is the speed round.
Oh, shit.
This is our last chance here, our new feature. We're going to go through 5 quick questions that our guests have not seen yet. They have a chance. So, Spencer, you have a chance to come back here.
All right. Do I start a point down?
Yes, you're a point down, so you got to get a point to tie, and then you got to win by one. So the way this works is it's first answer. Whoever says it first gets to pick that person. You got to give me a quick reason why.
Wait, no matter what the answer is?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's each one. Yeah. I'm going to say it, and whoever says it first is going to get... Because some of you might say the same thing is the reason why I'm saying
you're saying that if we have the same answer, he gets it first.
Yes, whoever said it first is the one who's going to dictate.
All right.
You each get to say your thing, and you each get a sentence to defend it, and I'm going to have to just pick it on based on that. And I might implore you, Mike, to help, because you're here, and I value
your
opinions.
I'd be happy to help.
Sure. All right, let's start the speed round. Do we have some speed round music? Whoa, yeah. All right, we'll do this quick. Fast answers, short follow-ups.
Yep.
The faster answer, the better.
Yep.
Unless you want to hold out and hopefully your person doesn't pick a good answer, then you can swoop in.
You can bid $1.
Here we go. Exactly. First round. 5 of these to go. Dante's Peak or Volcano?
Dante's Peak.
I heard Spencer first.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's it.
All right,
you don't
take
the same one. There's no argument. Spencer gets a point.
Okay.
Next one. Now you know how it works.
We answer simultaneously and Spencer gets a point.
Yeah, fast talkers.
Movie actors or directors, mind you, actors or directors, movie-wise. Name me the best Christopher.
Walken.
Christopher Guest.
Defend it.
I mean, Christopher Walken is an American icon. He's not only a great actor, but he's turned into one of the, you know, people tune in just to see him.
Spinal Tap, Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, Make Me Laugh, Harder Than Anything. They all hold up. He invented a genre, and I love it.
I'm going to go Walken. Dan's up one. Ready. Best Die Hard sequel?
Three.
Vengeance. Dan, well, he did. That's not the title.
Die Hard 3. So Die Hard with the Vengeance.
Fact checker, guy, help me on this one.
I'm answering quickly. Three is a lot quicker to say than with a Vengeance.
I think.
But Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy both would not accept that answer.
And also, can we go into the tape? I think Spencer said a Vengeance.
Rotten Tomatoes calls it Die Hard 3 with a Vengeance. IMDb calls it Die Hard with a Vengeance.
But IMDb, you're
Dan gets it. We gotta do this quick.
Right. It's a speed round. Bring it.
Speed round. So, Spencer, you're down. Yeah. You need to get these next two in order to win.
Oh, boy.
I'm actually going to change what you had.
Oh, the speed round's just flying by.
Who wins in a fight? Judge Dredd or RoboCop?
Judge
RoboCop.
Dredd.
Tell me why.
I should have picked RoboCop.
Dan!
Just trying to get back this one.
And then we don't need the last round. Dan is our winner. Wow. That was not very close. Did you calculate the scores? We'll have to do it.
It is Mike with 2, Spencer with 4, and Dan with 7.
Wow. You pouted and you pulled it off because of all the pouting. Fantastic fights to all of you. This is impressive. We're going to have to keep Dan off for a little while. He's got to retire. You have some other people build up some wins.
Like 3-on-1.
I want to thank all of you for watching. As always, if you're watching on YouTube, please comment below. Tell us what you want to fight, or tell us on Twitter or in the comments or on iTunes what you want to hear us fight about. Please remember we're on iTunes, so go subscribe us there. Also, I want to announce, thanks to our partners at Break, you can watch Freelance and Screen Junkies. You can watch full free movies on break.com/movies. There's some awesome movies there. Requiem for Your Dream, Swimming with the Sharks, Winter's Bone. But you can go to break.com/movies. Screen Junkies approved movies are there. Go check them out because you can watch fun free movies. I also, as always, want to thank Popcorn Talk Network, obviously. Please check out their shows. Meet the Movie Press, Marvel Movie News, Jedi Alliance, Anatomy of Movies, so much cool stuff. And as always, go check them out at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. And please tell them that Screen Junkies sent you. That's it for this week. I want to thank my panelists, Spencer Gilbert, at Spencer J. Gilbert. Anything you'd like to say?
At Spencer J. Gilbert. Thank you, United, for giving back Nick Mundy's luggage.
Oh, God.
Dan Merle, at Merle Dan on Twitter. Anything else you'd like to say, Dan?
I'm not mopey, I'm just passionate.
We love that, as do the fans. And the girls find you cute, Dan. Who is the cute one, guys?
I joked with them. This was the battle to decide who the cute one was, because we all three
camera
get
Camera one,
it.
Camera two.
Where's my camera? Mike Carlson, thank you for coming.
Thank
at
you.
Fat Carlson, PH Fat.
Yes, PHAT Carlson, CARL. It was my backyard wrestling name when I was a child.
Anything you'd like to tell the audience?
Hashtag Hobble or Jareth. Hashtag Jareth.
As always, Jason Inman stepping in for Dan on the Dan Cam at Jawin.
Yep.
Jason, hashtag anything Botanicus. You'd like to plug?
Hashtag Botanicus.
All right, I'll keep it alive. Hashtag Botanicus.
I can't believe you didn't do it. You had your chance. And also, please follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm trying Instagram out, guys. At Andy Signor. Please tell me what you want to see. Oh, and also, I want to thank our friends at Ripped Apparel. We're wearing some Ripped Apparel shirts. People ask a lot, where do you get your shirts? We Ripped Apparel gave us some fun free shirts.
Thanks,
we're like, cool.
Mine is not Ripped Apparel.
We love it.
This is indie wrestler
Crunch.
Chuck Taylor.
That's it. So please, as always, please check out Popcorn Talk Network, subscribe to YouTube, and please subscribe on iTunes, and we will see you next week!
Bye.
Every podcast we put on YouTube comes with this kick-ass graphic, listing all the topics your favorite Screen Junkies podcasters are talking about. If you click the topics, you can skip around and choose your own podcast battle royale. Go ahead, try them all. If you haven't already, subscribe to Screen Junkies on YouTube to join us for future fights. Or if you prefer to listen on iTunes, click the logo to download an audio version. Lastly, please support our friends at the Popcorn Talk Network for more awesome shows.